Okay, James, 82 games are in the books for the Leafs. Playoff time. Playoff preview. Finally.
Why is the season so short? Don't they want to go another month, the regular season? What if they just shorten the playoffs and make the regular season like baseball, where they play 108 million games?
So we are recording this on Thursday morning. I thought the regular season was over. It's not.
It is not over. No, it's over. That's for the Eastern insane. Conference. I've never seen it like this, where the only games left are in the West.
Very bizarre. Yeah, season's too long. Anyway, so the Leafs finish with 102 points, 46 wins, 33 in regulation. They end the season kind of on a downish note. Before we get to Matthews in the chase for 70, do you care? Do you think it matters? I don't really think it matters, just based on some of the lineups they're playing, what was going on. Think it makes any difference at all?
The only thing you worry about is that they haven't played really well in a game for a while, it feels like, and they haven't played a game that matters in a while. So, you know, we've seen in years past where they get a little bit complacent and it's hard for them to flip the switch right at the start of game one. So that's, I'll be looking for that. We'll see if they've learned that lesson on how to do that. But you're right, with the way that the lineups have been and the fact that they weren't really playing for anything, Sheldon Keefe said it, you know, it's human nature that you're not going to play those meaningless games as if they have meaning. But I don't know. Like you said there, it's been hard to like get a read on who's even going to be in the lineup for game one, which seems even more questions about who's playing with who and who's even going to be playing than I remember in past years.
Yeah, I think we're going to probably stay away from that today just because they're not practicing today. We'll find out at practice on Friday. I'll for sure write about that, so we can react at that point. But to your earlier point, I think the last really good game that they played was Florida on April 1st. And even that, like, 6-4.
18 days ago, you know.
Yeah, it's a long time. Like, and some of their wins, obviously, they beat Pittsburgh in overtime. They beat Montreal. They beat Jersey. And then, you know, they lose the last four. Samsonov will end up not playing for a week. I don't know if that matters. I mean, we've seen him come off breaks and play well, but he didn't exactly end his season on a great note. So there's that to kind of factor in as well.
Yeah, it's a bit unusual just to not play him in one of those. I guess they were thinking those last two games were going to be scrambly mess. Like the Tampa game looked almost like a beer league game, like the just preseason game maybe at best. So maybe they just wanted to protect him from seeing all the laser beams that Martin Jones was getting there in that game.
Yes. Well, so what we're going to do today, and we will talk about Matthews and 70 in a second, or the chase for 70. We're going to each come up with three questions. We each have three questions about the playoffs, big questions. But Matthews ends on 69 goals. Man, he had so many chances in the last couple games to get to 70. And it just, like he said afterward, it just wasn't meant to be for whatever reason. Like he could not have done more to push it. They could not have done more to push it, you know, with what they did at the end of that game.
It's funny, and the goalie, I was tweeting it and I didn't think they would actually do it, but then they pulled the goalie and they really went for it. What did he have 10 shots? He had 7 shots in the first period. And I was like, I had to look it up. It was like the 34th most shots in a period in NHL history.
Wow. He finished actually with 12, James.
The record for shots in a period is 10, but it's only ever happened once. And Matthews has only had 7 one other time. It was a game last year in a period. So you watch that first period and it's like, holy cow. Like, is he going to get 20 shots on goal? Is he going for Ray Bourque's record for most shots on goal in a game?
Yeah.
He had, and the goalie is, you know, Matt Tompkins playing like I think it was his 6th NHL game. He's been in the minors most of the year. And, you know, Hedman's not playing and just weird lineups and, It felt like it was going to happen, didn't it? Like it just,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what more Matthews was supposed to do. Like he had, that's just the way hockey is sometimes. Sometimes you score in a game where you only have one or two chances, and sometimes you don't score when in a game where you've got 10 chances.
Well, and it's funny, like I wrote about him, I've written about him a lot, but I think the last time I wrote about him, his shooting percentage was at like 19.5. And after 82, or actually 81 for him, 18.7, like all those shots, you know, 0 for 12. But man, what a season. 69 goals, 107 points, career highs in both. It's the best season in Leafs history. I mean, you can argue for Gilmore if you want. You could argue for Matthews 2 years ago, but I think this is in its own class just based on, you know, he's 12 goals ahead of Reinhardt. Nobody is scoring like this. It's mostly at even strength, dominant defensively. I don't know what else you can.
I think he's going to finish as the runner up for both the Hart and the Selke this year.
Yeah, that's what you had.
Well, I haven't filled up my ballot yet, but I my prediction is the voting is he's going to finish second for both of those, which is going to go down as one of the best all around seasons ever.
Yeah, based on the candidates that you could pick from, I had him first. I just submitted my ballot actually. I had McKinnon second. I think I had him. I don't know third. If
we're supposed to reveal our ballots.
I don't care. What are they going to do? I guess they could take it away.
They'll kick you out of the.
Okay, well, I won't Hockey Writers
Association. You'll have to go over to the Amateur Hockey Writers Association.
All right, well, quite a season. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how it translates to the playoffs.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So let's get to our big questions for the playoffs. You can go first.
Well, you and I didn't coordinate this. So what I was thinking okay. when I was putting this together, I was like, we're just going to pick the same things. Like,
no, well, I have lots of backup.
We're not going to end up having six big questions because I picked three and you picked three in a vacuum and we have no idea what the other one did. So
I know it's fun.
Number one on my list.
Yeah.
Number one. And I didn't hesitate is goaltending. That's what I put. That's what the big question is, because I think if you look at all the different matchups and everything in this series, I think the biggest disparity is goaltending. Swayman and Allmark have been great. They've both basically been top 10 goalies in the league this year. It looks like they're going to alternate them in the playoffs, which will be very interesting if they stick with that. And I just don't know what Toronto's going to get in net. I don't know which version of Samsonov's going to show up. Joseph Woll's really struggled since he came back from that injury. I think this is where if you're going to pick Boston in this series, I think you would pick it based on goaltending more than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and I think that is a huge question mark because it's just been such a volatile season for Samsonov. Obviously, the first half went very poorly. The second half went much, much, much better. He turned things around. Really impressive the way he was able to dig himself out of the rut that he got himself in. But then, like, it ends not great. We've had some injury issues or supposed injury issues that he ended up being fine. It's just such a volatile thing. And to your point with Woll, like the high ankle sprain just really killed his season. Like, that's such a hard injury. You know, they talked about it on the broadcast on TSN, just how difficult it is for any player, let alone a goalie. And we've seen him since he's come back. Like, he's just not been the same. He's very inexperienced. And you wonder, like, what he's going to look like in game one after the week off. We did see last year, James, like, we went into that series Leafs against Tampa saying, how is he going to play as well as Vasilevsky? And it didn't start well, but like ultimately he kind of got the edge on Vasilevsky. So I guess you're kind of hoping if you're the Leafs that he just kind of finds the guy he was for most of the second half and
keep it close. 18-5-2 since early January. Like he's since he was waived and went through the league. And I mean, he's won the vast majority of his games. So he hasn't always been great, but there have been some games where he's played really well. The thing I like about Samsonov over the Leafs' other options is he really feels like he's got that game breaker ability in him. Like he has the ability to steal a game. I look at Boston, though, like they're not that scary offensively. Where'd they finish in goals this year? Like middle of the pack, right? Like they're not 14th, 3.2 goals per game. Mm-hmm. The Leafs are second at 3.63. So Boston's not, they're not as good offensively. You look at like, it's Pastrnak and a bunch of guys.
Yeah, so, but their power play is pretty good. That might come up later. I guess you'd have to kind of hope for like what happened to Boston last year in the first round, where Allmark wins the Vezina. Well, I guess he doesn't win it until after. But then like it's just a wild series with Florida and lots of goals get scored. Like I'm looking at his game log. Yeah. One goal, five goals, two goals, two goals, four goals, six goals, and they lose the series. And obviously
a high scoring series favors the Leafs way more because, you know, Boston, if they're smart, they're trying to win 2-1 games and one mistake because they're gonna be a team that's, anyway, I know this is getting away from what my big question is, but for me, the biggest question is, do the Leafs get, I don't know that necessarily they need to have the best goalie in the series, but do they get good enough goaltending in the series that it's not, it's not a huge factor? Because I have full confidence that Allmark and Swayman are going to be good.
Well, how much, I don't know if grace is the right word, but like how much, we like the word leash in hockey, but is it two starts for Samsonov? Is it one? Like
I think it depends what he looks like. Like if he gets blown up in the first game, I don't know, with the way Wolves played, I feel like I would want to give him Samsonov a decent leash.
Yeah, but I think that's, but to your point, like you can kind of tell when he's off, when he starts giving up those goals where you're like,
can tell just watching him in the net, like before the goals even go in, like he, sometimes he's just like sliding all over the place.
Yeah. But to your point, like he does have that. I mean, this is why he was a first round pick. He does have that, like that high end, that he can win you a game at. Like, I guess you could say they had that a little bit with Campbell. I don't think they really had it with Anderson. He's got like
he's very athletic.
Pretty high. Yeah.
He makes some of those high danger saves that some goalies don't make. When Samsonov's locked in, like he's very talented.
All right. Time for my first question. I did not rank them based on priority, although I think that probably was a good idea. To me, this is a massive question. Do the Leafs get 2019 Marner merged with the 2024 player? And what I mean by that is, do they get the player who seemed to play with real freedom, real like a lightness to him, combined with what Marner has become? Because like back in 2019, when the Leafs played the Bruins and he had that really good series, he wasn't this. Like he was still growing. He was 21 at that point. Like he was still figuring out the league. He wasn't like a Selke trophy candidate. He wasn't killing penalties at that point, if I'm not mistaken. He's different now. And yet, like you think back to his playoff series over the years since, he's always just played tight. And you know, you're even talking to him, like this is something he recognizes. He will always say when he's playing really well, he's just playing free, and he's you can really see it with him. So I wonder if we get that version, if the Leafs get that version, or if we see more of the guy that we've seen in playoffs of recent years.
I did with our colleague Joshua Cloak. We were doing grading the season for all the players, and I had to do Marner's, and I found it really difficult to grade his season because it was kind of a little bit all over the place. You know, he looked like the dominant player for, what would you say, like 30, 35 games. You know, then there were the injuries, or the one main injury, the slow start to the season. Like he wasn't very good defensively early on for whatever reason. He wasn't making an impact in the first 20 odd games of the year. So I would say really it was like a half season where he looked like the Marner, you know. But you know what's interesting? At the end of the season, his points per game is identical to last year when he had 99 points.
Yeah. Well, that's so
the offensive piece at the end of the day was there. I think it was just more, he just looked off for long stretches of the season. And if he's not playing with Matthews, I'm not sure what you're going to get from Marner. And there's always a lot of pressure on him, but there's going to be a lot of talk about the, you know, 1 year left in the contract. And, you know, he's going to need to really shrug off some of those, I think you called them playoff demons in your story the other day. Like he's going to have to really be mentally tough and move past that and be able to push through.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think to your point, like his season really didn't start to kind of look normal-ish until January. And then like as soon as it was like kind of reaching its high point, him and Matthews were just destroying people together like they had in previous years. He sprains his ankle in Boston and he comes back and he's not playing with Matthews. And it's just a little different. Yeah, I think it's a good point. Like if he isn't playing with Matthews, maybe that helps him in some ways because obviously the matchups are going to be a little bit different. I haven't loved the Tavares Marner minutes over the years, but I thought they kind of found a little something late in the year. And then they were broken up again, obviously, because Max Domi was out. I kind of honestly, James, I would have liked them to have kept Marner with Tavares at the end if that's where they're going to be starting, just to kind of keep developing that chemistry. But obviously, it's not what they did. But yeah, like that's they need that guy. Like he put up a lot of points in that Tampa series, but like you go through the points and they're a little hollow. Like he never really found it. And
well, let me ask you this: how would you grade his season? Like what letter grade would you give him for the year?
So I don't know what you guys gave him. So I will say, if I'm just thinking about this, it's either like a B minus or a C plus.
I gave him a B, but yeah, it was B minus was what I was playing around with. I mean, at the end of the day, the end of the day, he ended up putting up, you know, 100 point pace and was really good for stretches. But, you know, what I said in the write up was he set such a high bar for what he can do that this year felt like a disappointment.
Yeah. And you can, James, like you can see it in the underlying numbers. Like they're just not what they usually are. Like he played 69 games. Of those 69 games, I think like 30 or two is standard, something like that. And he's one of the highest paid players in the league. Like that, to your point, like his standard is so high. It's not only the offense, it's the defense. And, you know,
I think he's known all year, though, that people are going to judge him and his season is going to be a success or failure based on the playoffs. I think that that's the reality for him. And, you know, maybe not emptying the tank 100% in the regular season makes sense. Like,
yeah. But then you really have to find that gear in the playoffs. Like, if he can find it, like, they are a different team. Like, I know, like, the team itself, management, and, you know, everyone, they're kind of just waiting for him to kind of decide and maybe find, like, a shift in his mind where he's just like, you know what? I'm better than, like, all these guys. I can do what I do on this level, and if I do, the team is going to win. Like I wrote in my story, you know, previewing the series, if Matthews and Marner are the two best players in the series or two of the three best players in the series, the Leafs should win. I mean, I guess the goaltending is kind of the wild card, but if those two are the two best,
well, they have a huge advantage there. Yes. Like you look at the top three offensive players for both teams, and there's a big time fall off for Boston after Pasternak. Like Pasternak is ahead of Nylander. Pasternak's one of the elite players in the league, but who's number two for them? Marchand finished second in scoring. Like I had Marchand in the fantasy pool. I watched him a lot this year. Like he's
slowing down.
He's 36 years old. Like this is the first year where it's like, oh yeah, now he's looking older. So if he's your second best offensive player, or is it Charlie Coyle, or is it, you know, the Leafs have an advantage offensively overall, and a lot of it's right there at the top of the lineup. But if Marner and Nylander and Matthews don't produce like three of the best offensive players in the league, as we've seen in the past, then that advantage gets nullified.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how they're built. They're built on those guys being super duper stars. And if they're just okay, that's not going to be enough. And like, to your point, if you were ranking the star power in the series in terms of like, who are the best players, you would start with Matthews. You'd probably go Pasternak. And then it's like Marner and Nylander in whatever order you want.
Yeah.
So That's
unless you want to put like a McAvoy in there or something. Like
sure, but I just mean like pure like offensive star. I guess I should have qualified. Let's move on to your second question.
My second question is I just wrote down Pasternak. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the question isn't Pasternak gonna like he's gonna be good? Like you know he's a Leafs killer. The question is, can the Leafs find a way to slow him down and stop him? Like Are they going to be with how bad their penalty kill has been this year? Like you can just picture Pasternak destroying them on the power play. And Boston's so well coached. You watch their power play and they're the same, even with different personnel. They're just one of your favorite words, wily. They're just a crafty team, and they're going to find opportunities. And Can the Leafs slow Pasternak down? That's my question.
Well, and that's a massive question on both fronts. I think that, you know, I went back and watched the March 7th game that the Leafs and Bruins played, and he was so dangerous on the power play, like to your point, when he's, you know, he's on that left circle. It's not only just the threat of his one timer, it's the room that that creates for him to do other stuff, because he's like a really good passer, and it kind of opens up other guys, because you're so terrified on the penalty kill of him loading up for that one timer where he scores a ton of goals, that suddenly like other lanes open up. And obviously the Leaf penalty kill has not been very good this season. That's like a huge thing. Like if they can't slow him down on the penalty kill, and then 5-on-5, like the matchup isn't amazing, right? Like you're probably, you know, on the road, you don't have control of the matchup. Obviously, I don't know what they're going to do on defense. I don't know what they're going to do up front. Like I would think when the games are in Toronto, they will potentially use the Tavares line against Pasternak. I think their primary option, for going up against the Pasternak line is Benoit McCabe, I think. Like, what do you, like, that's, maybe it's just like whoever's out there, like, I don't know what they're going to do, and I don't know if it's going to be good enough.
Do you believe Keith when he, you know, he said at one point during the season that they don't have a shutdown pair, like they don't have a one pair they're going to try and match up against Pasternak?
I think that's half true, but like I've written, and I think we've talked about, you're always going to prefer one group to another.
Like, I think it's more like you want Matthews out there probably against Pasternak, right?
No,
like you want,
like, I don't your think best. So, James.
No, you're gonna. You no. think they're gonna go Tavares Marner against him?
Yeah, I mean it's just gonna depend on how things shake out. Like if the Matthews Domi thing doesn't work, or Domi is not healthy, or whatever, that's gonna change some things. Like Boston is going into the series saying we want to match Charlie Coyle's line against Matthews, so that means, you know, in all likelihood, Tavares's line is going to face Pasternak and Zacha and Heinen. And then the question is, like, can they win that battle? You know, one of the things that was interesting in watching back that March 7th game, the Leafs were in a different state in terms of like the way that they were using their lineup. But one line that kind of was like kind of effective, not like amazing, but sort of effective, was Tavares playing with neither Marner or Nylander. It was back in the day when he was kind of the third line center, and that night he was playing with McMahon and Yarncroc, and they were kind of like heavy, and like they kind of got some shifts where they were just kind of wearing Boston down a little bit. So I kept that in the back of my mind, just thinking about the series, if that's something that they could go to. But you're right, like Pasternak is something else. Like he's owned them over the years. There's not much else to say. Like I think that will lead into some other questions. So let's take a break and we will get to my next question. All right, James, my question number two, it kind of is what we were just talking about a little bit, but can this defense hold up against the Bruins? Like you mentioned, they don't have the same kind of caliber of offense as the Leafs, or that they might've in the past, you know, that they obviously lost their top two centers after last season. But this defense is just a gigantic question mark. Like the only guy I'm really confident in is Riley, just because like repeatedly we've seen him elevate his play in the postseason, but everybody else, I just don't know what they're going to get. And I go back to those March games where they play Boston twice in a span of a week, once at home, once on the road, and their defense got exposed, and they didn't have Edmondson for that. And that's part of why they got him. But you remember, you know, that Boston kept getting inside. They kept winning like these battles of getting to the net. They were really physical on the forecheck, which caused problems for the Leaf defense at times.
Well, that's it. Moving the puck is going to be the thing. Like if you've got, like if you play a lineup that's got Lyubushkin and Edmondson and Brody with the way he's playing and Benoit, like there's a lot of guys that have a hard time on the breakout and moving the puck cleanly. And Boston, like this is what happened to the Leafs in the playoffs last year. I still feel like it didn't get talked about enough.
Yes.
Like they had a heck of a time against both Tampa and Florida on the forecheck. The book on the Leafs, and I don't think it's changed even with the personnel being slightly different, is make their life miserable coming out of their own end, and they won't be able to get going on offense. And that's a lot of what we saw last year in the playoffs. And I don't, with the personnel the Leafs have, I don't know that there's an easy solution for that.
No, you're right. Like that is what happened to the McCabe Brody pair. They just kind of like self-destructed. They couldn't handle Florida's physicality, even Tampa's physicality on the forecheck. And you even think, James, like just recently this week in that Florida game, that second period, they just started hammering the Leafs defense on the forecheck, and the Leafs couldn't move the puck and couldn't get going on offense. And you're right, like that is the game plan. Even in that March 7 game I referenced, the first period, the Leafs were playing second half of back-to-back. Boston just came out and was just like, we are going to hit you every chance we get. We're going to force you into turnovers. And if the Leafs can't handle that, like it's going to be very hard for them to win this series. And it's not like they have a ton of options of great puck movers. Liljegren like might be the sneaky kind of like not key, but a key.
Because what do you do with your lineup on the blue line? What do you do with pairings? Like, I think it almost feels like the debate, the people who could sit would be Liljegren or Brody, or maybe Labushkin. I don't know. Maybe, or Edmondson if he's still hurt. How much did Edmondson play the other night? Like, he's, I don't know. I don't know if, like, he's a guy that's had a lot of injuries, and even though he's only 30, he's got so many miles on his body that he plays older than that sometimes. So it might even just come down to health too, right? Like Liljegren's missed a lot of time too. So yeah, I think you gotta think about who's going to be ready.
Yeah, it's a big question. Like, you know, just to finish your point, he played 16:41 in that Florida game, Edmondson. But I think of like Liljegren, that was really kind of like, I don't know, flashpoint's the right word, but those Boston games, that was kind of an alarm bell because he was the guy who really kind of got exposed at that point. You remember that was the time when he was playing with Brody and they were starting to look interesting and kind of working a little bit. And then Boston just was just kind of destroyed that. Brody's like a really big key, right? Like it's been better, I think, since he came back in the lineup, but he's still, it's still not the same. And I wonder if they end up, I don't know what they're going to do. And that's why I'm a little reluctant to delve too deep into pairings because Friday we'll find out. But I mean, if it was you, who would you sit?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's me. Yeah. Like I'm not, it's hard to predict what they're going to do because we don't know the health of everybody, but I think if it's me, I want Brody playing. Yeah. And the one I feel the most nervous about is Labushkin, but
I'm with you. Yeah.
But I don't know who you play with Riley though, because Riley Brody has been, that's what you would do. Eh? It's been bad for so long and so many stretches this year.
Yeah. What's interesting is like the numbers, I haven't checked them this week, but at last check, the numbers for Riley Labushkin are good. It's just like, you notice the times when Labushkin just cannot move the puck effectively to his forwards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes he's passing to the other team. Like, it's just his vision coming out of his end is, it's a bit scary.
The way I've been thinking about it, James, and is like, if I were the coaching staff and I had to play somebody, who do I trust more, Brody or Labushkin? I just trust Brody more. Like, I can play him more. I can play him in more situations. It's not been great, but I feel better about him than Labushkin. But like, Labushkin is what they wanted. They wanted big monsters on their defense, and obviously they got him to play with Riley. I mean, you could sit Liljegren, like, if you wanted to. I mean, that's what's ended up happening in previous years. I believe he started the series against Tampa last year and then came out. He didn't actually, because of all the additions that they made on defense, he came in later. I don't know. Like, Liljegren is the second best puck mover after Riley. So I don't know.
I think they might just not. My guess is what they do is that either they feel like Edmondson's not healthy enough, or they just sit Liljegren. I don't see them sitting Brody. Like, I think Keefe still, and especially if he's playing on the left side and he's playing in the third pair, I think he can live with Brody. And you want to use him on the penalty kill. And
yeah, I mean, the only red flag, James, is like, it was a little weird that he didn't play that Florida game, because to me, that Florida game suggested that's their defense. Like, that's what they're going to go into game one with. I mean, if you look back to last year, they started game one against Tampa with McCabe, Brody, Giordano Hall, Riley Shen. And obviously the defense is totally different now. But you're right. Like, what you could do is you could play Riley with Lyubushkin, McCabe and Benoit, and then you could play Edmondson and Brody and just have Brody on lighter duty on the third pair. And that's something they played around with a little bit towards the end of the season, seeing those two together with Brody on the right. So we'll see. That's an option. What is your next question?
Well, I don't know if you think we've addressed this already, but my other question is basically, do the core four deliver in the playoffs in this series?
No, I think that's a good question.
Do they rise to the moment? I mean, we talked about Marner, but, you know, Nylander's really struggled towards the end of the year. You know, if you're playing him on the third line with Holmberg and Yarncroc or whoever he's with, is he going to be able to make as much of an impact? And is he going to be able to work his way out of this little funk that he's had at the end of the year? How much does it linger with him that it, would he have one goal in his last 12 games, five points, something like that? Like, it's been,
yeah,
it's been more than just a 4 or 5 game drought. And I know you talked to him about this and it seems like it's in his head a little bit.
Yeah. It's not a typical thing for him to be in this kind of like where he's kind of searching mentally, and you can really see it. And, you know, one thing that stuck out to me and just watching in the last few weeks is when he's going like that, the first couple months of the season, especially when he was just like dominating the league, he was super decisive. And you can kind of see once he loses a bit of confidence, that decisiveness kind of disappears a little bit. And he brought that up, that like there's a little bit of hesitation at times when, you know, he's opportunities to shoot the puck, and his shots, like until very recently, had been coming down, down, down as the season progressed. I didn't love like the way he was used at times. You know, he's playing obviously with Tavares on like what amounted to a, like kind of a matchup line. That's, I don't know what you're going to do. He played with Holmberg a bit. That's not ideal. And then their power play, like their power play wasn't great. He generates a lot of momentum and points from the power play. But yeah, he's searching. Like, of the big four guys, like, he's the one who I think has had the best time in the playoffs. Like, he's produced the best of those four.
Yes.
So you hope that that's what happens.
Well, and he's had an awesome season, too. I mean, like, on the whole, like, I looked it up. He was third in NHL scoring in January. You know, like, he was... It's just, I think you would rather it go the other way where, you know, Marner's season, he's been better later in the year as opposed to, you know, Nylander being one of the best players. He was one of the best players in the league in the first half of the season. And I don't think he's been terrible, but you've seen some of the defensive mistakes, and you wonder if that's just because you're playing these meaningless games at the end of the year and the lineup's just a jumbled mess, and or you wonder if there's going to be some carryover, you know. But I think that I just think that it's the same old thing with the core four. Like, everybody is going to be so down on this group if they're not able to get it done, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Last year didn't really erase anything. Like, it getting out of one round and then falling flat in the second round, I don't get the sense that there's any grace that the fan base is going to give this group.
Well, I think a couple things happened with Nylander. I think the 100 points thing started to get into his head, because like for forever, it looked like it was like a formality that it was going to happen. And then like he stopped scoring and then the points started drying up. And it was like, I think from talking to him, he started thinking about it and he's like, oh boy. And you remember last year, the same thing happened. It wasn't 100 points, but he was gearing towards 40 goals for the first time, and he went into a slump, and it took until game 82 for him to get 40. The positive, if you want to go back to last year, is he was able to find himself again in the playoffs. Like, he wasn't amazing. I think it's been a little overstated how great he was in last year's playoffs, but he was productive, and he kind of got himself back to what he was. And I think if you're the Leafs, that's what you're hoping. The other guy we haven't talked about at all, as far as playoffs, is Matthews. Like, they need this to carry over. They like, he, not that he's going to score every game, but that he's going to be the best player in the series. Like, he has to be the best player.
He has to at least match Pasternak. Like, he has to at least, you can't have Pasternak score 7 goals in the series and Matthews has 3 or something.
Yes.
I mean, you get 69 goals in 81 games. I mean, in a 7 game series, that's basically, you know, 6 goals. It's basically the same equivalent. Like, you need him to be a factor, a big factor. And you need them to be, the thing too is that if you looked, I think if you look just at the offensive totals for the Leafs core four in the playoffs, I think it's sometimes a little bit misleading because you need the big guys, all of them, to be an impact late in the series is when you need offensive production game six and game seven from those guys.
Yes. I remember looking at that at some point in last year's playoffs and writing about it, that they hadn't delivered. I think of the four, Nylander had kind of delivered the most in those bigger games. But yeah, Matthews and Marner, especially at key moments. I mean, Matthews had some moments in the Tampa series, obviously, but you're right. Like, I'm looking at like his goal production in every playoffs, 4-6, 1-7, 5-7, 2-5, 1-7, 4-7, 5-11. And obviously the 5-11 comes with him not scoring in the second round against Florida. And like, if he's not going to be able to score a bunch, like it's going to be hard for them to win. Like, I really think that got a little bit lost in the second half, as much as we talked about how much he was scoring. If he's not scoring every single game, basically, their second half record just isn't going to be nearly as good as it was. Like, that papered over a lot of issues for them. Like, their goaltending was okay, good at times. Their penalty kill was bad. Their power play was bad. But he was scoring.
Well, the other thing that happened in the second half too, Jonas, is they got secondary scoring that came to life. And I know there's a little bit, it feels like the way this team is built is it's not as good defense. We said this right out of free agency. It's not as good defensively. The hope has to be that, number one, they're better offensively with more depth from Domi, Bertuzzi, Nye's playing a full season, you know, that they're going to get more from guys down the lineup. And that manifested over the second half of the season. And number two, that it's going to be more playoff type, get into the battle, win the scrums, kind of a lineup. And we'll see if that, I mean, they're, would they finish with this year? 102 points? Like, they're 9 points back of where they were last year. I think that's fair. The question is, are they a better playoff team than they were last year?
Well, and I'm glad you brought up Bertuzzi and Domi, because they got those guys for now. Like, this is what they got them for, and they got them in part for their ability to help the offense, because obviously we had seen in previous years, like, the Leafs just didn't have enough. Like, it, a big part of that is like their big guys didn't deliver, and that's what they're built on. But that's got to be it. Like, Bertuzzi needs to kind of keep this up. He's not going to need to score, or you can't expect him to score 5 goals in 7 games like he did last year for Boston, but he needs to be productive, and Domi's got to keep doing his thing with Matthews. And like, you need Yarncroke to come back and maybe chip in a goal or two. And you need Nice. Like, they need all those guys to help at the bottom of their lineup. And I just wonder, depending on what they do with their lines, how much they'll be able to get. I wonder if having Nylander, Marner, and Matthews spread out helps that way. Like, if that leads to Nylander maybe breaking out and being the guy in a series. So, yeah, that's interesting. I think it's my final question. Let's see what I got here. Yeah, you know what? This is kind of what we touched on. I'm looking at the power play, James, because we talked about the penalty kill. Their power play needs to be the best power play in the series, because I don't trust their penalty kill. And their power play has the tools to be dangerous and to win them a series. And the problem is, we haven't seen that. For the most
part. The other problem is, Jonas, is that the Leafs penalty kill pretty much sucks this year. So
yes,
for them to be the best power play, they're going to need their penalty kill not to allow Boston to score 30-35%, which you look historically, like in the playoffs, the Leafs special teams have not been very good. Like, it's been one of the low key storylines. If you look over for their playoff disappointments, power play has fallen flat a lot, and the penalty kill has been bad. Like, they've been one of the worst penalty killing teams in the playoffs over the last, whatever, 6 or 7 years.
Well,
penalty kill's as bad as it's been. They're under 80% this year, right? Like, it's been as bad as it's been in a long time.
Yes, you're right about that. I mean, you look in the playoffs, their penalty kill 21, it was 84%. That was Montreal. Montreal wasn't great. 22, 78.8, and last year 73.3, and then their power play 13%, 14%, 25%. But if you look at like their power play in last year's playoffs, there were certain times when they just needed a goal from their power play and they just didn't get it, and they're going to need that. And obviously they've got their top unit back together, and if that can be like, if they can keep it even in goal and they can get their power play to be the best power play in the series, their chances of winning the series obviously are going to go up. It's just, do you think they can get back to what their power play was in that month of, what was it? I guess February, when they were at like 50%, they were just destroying teams. So
I don't know. I just, it,
Boston has a good penalty kill.
You can, yeah, you can almost lump this one in with the core four question, because the power play is going to be a big part of them delivering. And, you know, we probably haven't talked enough about, like, I think the thing that to keep in mind, other than the goaltending and other than Pasternak with Boston, is they're just a smart team. They're a really good two-way team. They're extremely well coached. They're going to be in the right position. They're not going to be having dumb turnovers coming out of their end. They're going to be McAvoy. I think he's a top 10 defenseman in the NHL.
Sure.
You know, and Lindholm's been a revelation for them. I think that there's some potential weakness there when you get into their third and fourth guys, like, you know, Carlo, and they're not as deep. The Bruins are not as deep offensively. They're not as deep down the lineup up front, you know, third, fourth line. They're not as deep on their depth defense pairs as they have been in the past. There's some weaknesses there, and I think, you know, the Leafs are gonna have to exploit that. And maybe it's when their second penalty kill unit's out there, you gotta break through, or they're gonna have to find a way. But yeah, I think that special teams in general is going to be a huge key in this series, and staying disciplined too. Like, the Leafs going to have to make sure, like, there's going to be lots of scrums and lots of nonsense going on for sure. And they need to make sure they're not taking dumb penalties, because they had too many guys down the stretch that were taking bad penalties.
Well, and there's one guy in particular who is going to try to make them take penalties, and that's Brad Marchand. And we've seen playoffs, regular season, like, he's effective at that. Like, he will make you drive you nuts, and they have to be really careful. Like, you remember that game in March where he goads McCabe into a penalty. Obviously, he has that hit on Matthew Nyes that knocks him out of the game, and then, you know, Domi kind of takes a run at him later, takes a penalty. Like, that can't happen, especially with their penalty kill being the way it is. And to your point, James, like, Boston just feels like a team that's not going to beat itself. So yes, if you're going to do that stuff, you'll lose the series, because they're not going to do dumb stuff that's going to, you know,
they need like, yeah, they need the emotion of the series. They need the Domi, Bertuzzi types, Benoit, Edmondson. They need to make sure they don't go full Kadri. They need to make sure they don't overcompensate, you know, and they use the emotion in the wrong way. So that's going to be the end of the day. You know, we can talk about being more playoff ready and being willing to go into the scrums and do all that stuff, but at the end of the day, it matters who scores. And if you let that physicality and not being quote unquote intimidated by the Bruins and all that be the main factor in the series, you might end up sitting in the penalty box too much to win.
Well, and let's close off with one other thing that's not a question, but I do think we should bring it up in addition to the discipline, is I want to see what kind of series Sheldon Keefe coaches, because I think what we've seen from him too often is it's a little too much activity and it's a little too frenetic. Mm-hmm. And I think he needs a little bit more steadiness and steady on the rudder. And like, at times, like, it's just like, it's too much. It's like one thing goes wrong and it's changed everything. It's like, you know, it's the power play is a bad night. It's take Riley off. Like, there's got to be a little bit of like calm, I think, exuding from him. I thought he did a really good job during the regular season. I think it's the best job he has probably done as the Leafs coach, but his playoffs have not been great along with the team. Obviously, they've won just the one round, and they need him to kind of set the tone, I think, properly, because like, the emotions will be there, and like, we've seen his emotions at times obviously get the best of him.
Well, he probably has more riding on the series than anybody. Like, he's the guy who's really at the top of the list of people who won't be back if it's a big time disappointment in the series. So I think the emotional part of it applies to Keefe too. And now that he's been around, he needs to kind of rise to the occasion and not get caught up in things. And it's interesting though, Jonas, you know, I was looking the other day at the most frequent line combinations that the Leafs had used this season. And there aren't very many that they've used a lot. Like, you know, the top, yeah. I can't remember what the minutes were, but it was something like the most frequent line combination had only been together like 14 games or something like that. And so they've played pretty much everybody with everybody, and that can go two ways. You know, that can make things incoherent and confusing in the playoffs. Or maybe people are used to playing with a whole bunch of different people at this point.
Well, I just pulled it up. They've actually put a bit more than that. Their most frequently used combination this year is Marner, Matthews, Knies. And obviously that's not a thing anymore. Second was Bertuzzi, Nylander, Tavares. That's not a thing anymore. Third was Yarncroc, Domi, Robertson.
Do you have how many minutes were the top two that they played together?
Top one, the Marner, Matthews, Knies, 406 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then Tavares, Bertuzzi, Nylander, 365.
Yeah, so that's like 25 games. It's a little bit more than I was expecting. But yeah, they just...
But none of those combinations are together. None.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I would say, you know, that Matthews, Domi, Bertuzzi is up to almost 150. And the numbers are just like off the charts for them. So will that translate? That would be a big deal if it translated. Obviously, they're going up like Boston isn't the same kind of defensive monster that they used to be. Obviously, their personnel has changed, but they're still a good defensive team. They have really good goaltending. So we'll see if, you know, the Leafs can break through. Like, I think it's going to be a really close series. Like, if you were picking one team over the other, it's like 52-48, 51-49. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and the preview that we have from our analytics team is really good, and they've got Boston at a 53% favorite. So, but a good breakdown of all the particulars from a numbers perspective on The Athletic today.
Well, be sure to subscribe to The Athletic if you don't already. We are going to have tons and tons and tons of good stuff during the playoffs. Joshua Cloak and I are both going to be in Boston, in addition to Chris Johnson, our guy.
And Fluto. Don't forget Fluto.
Covering the Boston Bruins.
Who's awesome on the Bruins. So
go to theathletic.com/leafreport to sign up. We are planning to record after every two games. That's our tentative plan right now. So we'll be back after game two. We'll see what's going on at that point. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you to Pudge, our producer. Thanks, James.